Hello everyone, thank you for joining us. In today's top story, Iran says the US, the UK and Israel are continuing their subversive plots against the country 45 years after supporting a deadly crackdown on the nation. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman says the recent public meeting in London between the Israeli intelligence minister and anti-Iran figures is clear proof of the relentless scheming. Iran has repeatedly blamed the US, the UK and Israel for the deadly riots that broke out in the country last year. Nasser Kanani said the same, quote, sinister triangle supported the massacre on September 8, 1978 by the Pahlavi regime against an uprising which eventually led to the Islamic Revolution. The bloodshed in Tehran has come to be known as the Black Friday Massacre. Human rights activist Mohsen Naqvi says Israeli intelligence minister's meeting with anti-Iran figures shows the regime's clear involvement in riots in Iran.
And the fact that the intelligence minister of Israel is meeting with these groups who have been responsible with the on-ground riots in Iran, especially in Tehran, so-called leaders of the groups kept on defending the riots by saying, or even other so-called human rights activists who were supporting these riots kept saying that this was an organic demonstration and it reflected upon the will of the people. This meeting in itself is enough evidence to prove the involvement that the Zionist regime had in exploiting the death of Mahsa Amini. And especially now that the one-year anniversary of Mahsa Amini's death is approaching, they plan on sinistering and planning something similar within Tehran. So clearly this was not, these protests are not a reflection of the Iranian will, but it is rather a scheme of the enemies of the Islamic Republic who are trying to exploit the death of an innocent young girl. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
Israeli forces have attacked anti-settlement protesters in the occupied West Bank, leaving dozens of Palestinians injured. The troops fired tear gas and rubber bullets at demonstrators in Kafr Qaddoum, east of Qalqilia. They also attacked protesters in several regions near the city of Nablus. Clashes also took place in Gariut village as Israeli settlers backed by the regime forces staged a provocative raid there. Also, earlier on Friday, Israeli forces stormed Shufat refugee camp northeast of Al-Quds, removing Hamas flags and banners supporting the resistance movement. The raid triggered clashes with young Palestinian men, leaving dozens of them injured. The former head of Israel's spy agency Mossad has admitted that the regime is enforcing an apartheid system on the occupied West Bank. Tamir Pardo has warned that the greatest catastrophe awaits Israel as it's reaching a place similar to South Africa, a reference to an apartheid regime there.
Former head of Israel's Mossad spy agency has said the occupying entity enforces an apartheid system against Palestinians. The admission has been made by Tamir Pardo, who was the regime's spy master from 2011 to 2016.
Let's say there is a car accident between a car of a Jewish settler and a car of a Palestinian who lives in Hebron or Nablus. Each one of them stands before a different legal system, one under the military legal system and the other the civilian system. In a territory where two people are judged under two legal systems, that's an apartheid state.
Pardo becomes the latest former senior official to have concluded that Israel's treatment of Palestinians in the West Bank amounts to apartheid. That's a reference to the system of racial separation in South Africa that ended in 1994. Leading rights groups in Israel and abroad, as well as Palestinians, have accused Israeli occupation of the West Bank of morphing into an apartheid system. A handful of former Israeli leaders and diplomats have warned that Israel risked becoming an apartheid regime, but Pardo's language was even more blunt. Israel has been practicing an apartheid system against Palestinians, though far more brutally, since 1948. This is when, with the support of Western governments, Zionist terrorists claimed Palestine to be their homeland. Israel launched another war in 1967, occupying more Palestinian territory, such as the West Bank, including East al-Quds, that Palestinians want as the capital of their future state. Since then, Israeli apartheid authorities have created a judicial system that allows them to steal more Palestinian homes and land and dispossess them in order to make way for more illegal settlers. Rights groups have pointed to the discriminatory policies within Israel and in occupied East al-Quds, its blockade of the Gaza Strip, which has been ruled by the Hamas group since 2007, and its occupation of the West Bank.
Because the U.S. was the last pillar to fall, the last domino to fall in sustaining apartheid in South Africa, where it had to fall in line with everyone else. But during apartheid South Africa and the international campaign against it during that regime's tenure, the United States issued the most vetoes within the Security Council to protect apartheid there, to protect apartheid in Namibia and South Africa. And here we're seeing a similar pattern.
Leaders of G20 countries gather in the Indian capital, New Delhi, for their annual summit on the weekend. The Group of 20 is an intergovernmental forum made up of the European Union and 19 rich countries. The two-day summit aims to address issues of global concern like economy, food and energy security, as well as the war in Ukraine. However, there are divisions at the G20 over those issues, especially the Ukraine war. That has already raised doubts whether participants would be able to put together a final declaration. The West, led by the US, wants a clear condemnation of the Ukraine conflict. China and Russia don't accept that. Plus, leaders from these two countries are not attending the summit. Instead, the Russian foreign minister and the Chinese premier are scheduled to attend. That makes things harder. Developing countries' repayment of their debts is another thorny issue in the event. Russia summons the ambassador of Armenia after the country announces plans to hold joint war games with the US. The Russian Foreign Ministry said in a statement that the drills on the Armenian territory are part of what it called a series of recent unfriendly steps by Yerevan. The ministry said those steps also include a trip to Kiev by the Armenian Prime Minister's wife amid Russia's war with Ukraine. Yerevan has also increased its criticism of Moscow's peacekeeping role in Nagorno-Karabakh. Armenia's prime minister recently said Russian forces have failed in their role to protect civilians and the freedom of movement in a key corridor in Azerbaijani-controlled areas in Karabakh. The US has confirmed that it seized a tanker containing nearly 1 million barrels of Iranian oil in April on the pretext of violation of anti-Iran sanctions. Earlier in our news review program, we discussed the issue with our guests. Let's have the story and hear what our guests had to say. Welcome to the news review section, where we delve deeper into the day's top story. The US has confirmed that it has seized a tanker load of Iranian oil, escalating tensions between the two sides. The Justice Department says it seized the Greek managed tanker Suez Rajan and its load of nearly 1 million barrels of oil in April. The Iranian crude was allegedly being sold to China when it was intercepted. The US claims the sale violated sanctions on Iran. Tehran has already warned of an appropriate response in case of any act of piracy against Iranian tankers, stressing that the era of hit and run is over. Now, to talk further on this, we are joined by Emeritus Professor of Accounting from California State University, Mr. Paul Foote, from Irvine, California, and also Mr. Don DeBar, activist and commentator from Ossining, New York City. First of all, welcome to the program, sir.
My pleasure.
Glad to have both of you on the program. Now, starting with Mr. Foote, now many people are calling the U.S. seizure of the Iranian oil tanker, which is worth around $56 million, they call it a classic example of broad daylight banditry. Your idea on this, sir?
Well, that's absolutely correct that America is currently being led by organized crime. But people need to read some history. This is nothing new. The media in this country is now saying, well, we're taking it from the Revolutionary Guard. Nonsense. You're taking it from the people of Iran. Read some history. In the 1800s, there was the Reuters concession, where a weak Shah agreed to give away most of the oil to benefit himself. Early 1900s, there was the Darcy concession. Same thing. And then the British American, the British Petroleum, the British Iranian Petroleum Company, is now BP, was taking oil and giving almost nothing from the proceeds to Iran. So the theft has been taking place for more than 100 years against Iranians. The techniques have changed. The current technique is to claim that America has a right to issue sanctions. America is supposed to be a country of free enterprise, capitalism. The people currently in power, such as Biden and all the supporters of Israel, are anti-capitalist and enemies of the American people.
That's right, sir. Now, Mr. Dondebar, it took the cargo, or the U.S., to transfer the cargo to another tanker. It was named MR Euphrates. It took them 4 months of dilly-dallying. Why was the reason for this?
Well, first of all, the taking of this, the legal process around seizing someone else's property it's called civil forfeiture in the United States. And the location of this particular seizure, Texas, is the worst abuser of this process. They're noted for the abusive process. People driving through Texas would get pulled over for speeding, and the next thing in their Maserati, and the next thing you know, the sheriff has a Maserati. It was really that bad. Professor was right. The foundational law here, which is the assumption that the United States can impose sanctions on one country, prohibiting them from doing business with another, flies in the face of international law. There's no authority for that under the UN Charter or anything flowing from the UN Charter. The U.S. has no right to interfere with commerce between Iran and any other country in the world. This is just not something that is recognized under international law. The legal term for what the U.S. has done is called piracy. I mean, this is as much piracy as if Joe Biden was staggering around on a wooden leg with a parrot on his shoulder. And we're talking about 1 million gallons of oil. What's the price of crude go now? You're talking tens of millions of dollars. This is major theft. It's one of many. If you look at Libya's oil, Iraq's oil, Syria's oil, even now, being illegally stolen from Syria in direct violation of international law and at gunpoint, it's hard to come to any other conclusion than the United States is a pirate state out stealing things at gunpoint from every other country in the world that it can take over. If you look at oil, Venezuela and Iran are two that resist, and they're under heavy sanctions, and the others were conquered. Iraq, Libya, that's what the United States is, and you have to see this in that context. I don't see any other context for it.
Mr. Foote, like Mr. Dondebar said about piracy, it's been looting Syrian oil, Libyan oil. Syria, the Syrian oil ministry, accused the U.S. of stealing 66,000 barrels of oil per day, which is around 80% of the country's oil production. So how can this happen in 2023 without any consequences?
It's the problem of the ignorance of the American voters. They rely on the mainstream media, which is dominated by Zionists. They're ignorant. They don't know what's going on. And they have no understanding of capitalism and moral values. This is theft. We should not be involved in this kind of theft. You can add Ukraine to the list, too. On and on. We're just throwing away America's wealth and making enemies around the world, and bringing closer the day when no one will want to do anything with us. thanks to the lunatic leftists, the neoconservatives, and the Christian Zionists in this country.
Before we wrap this up, Mr. Dunderbar, Yvonne said or warned of an appropriate response. It's also said the era of hit and run is over. So what does Tehran mean by this?
You know, I mean, this is also a provocation, obviously. And this comes right after the BRICS conference, the ascension, the partnering of Iran and others, the rapprochement between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and the outreach that Iran and Venezuela have done to each other, that shows that they can saber rattle all they want, they could steal a few more boatloads of oil, but the world is changing and they're going to have to deal with that. And as long as there's solidarity among the countries that are the victims of these sanctions and worse, then the position of the United States will be, in essence, rendered impotent. And, you know, when you have all the oil, you get to set the terms for the sale of it. And, you know, they might be having a hissy fit about that right now, but they're going to have to deal with this. So I would say Iran should be patient, obviously hold up its dignity, but be patient because the world is shifting in its favor.
That's right, sir. Mr. Foote, Mr. Dunderbar, thank you for being on the program, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. And with that, we come to the end of the News Review program.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
The U.S. will send depleted uranium arms to Ukraine despite risk to civilians. The weapons have been linked to spikes in birth defects, miscarriages, and cancer. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Reuters, the Biden administration will send controversial armor-piercing munitions containing depleted uranium to Ukraine. The munition can be fired from U.S. Abrams tanks, which are expected to arrive in Ukraine in the coming weeks. The shells, which will come from U.S. excess inventory, would be funded by the Presidential Drawdown Authority, which lets the president make transfers from U.S. stocks without Congress's approval in the case of an emergency. Truthout also wrote the news follows an earlier decision by the Biden administration to provide cluster munitions to Ukraine, despite concerns over the danger such weapons pose to civilians. If the U.S. deploys depleted uranium shells to Ukraine, Russian President Vladimir Putin has threatened to retaliate with DU rounds, which are linked to birth defects, miscarriages, and cancer. Depleted uranium is a byproduct of the production of fuel used in nuclear power stations. Its extreme density gives rounds the ability to penetrate armor plating easily. The use of depleted uranium munitions has been fiercely debated, with opponents like the International Coalition to Ban Uranium Weapons saying there are dangerous health risks from ingesting or inhaling depleted uranium dust, including cancers and birth defects. Common Dreams also reported the U.S.-led NATO coalition that waged the 1999 air war against Yugoslavia also used DU munitions, which experts believe are responsible for a surge in leukemia in the region, both among the local population and foreign troops deployed in the war zone. Peace groups have long campaigned for a ban on DU munitions. Last September, the United Nations General Assembly approved an Indonesian draft resolution urging further research of the health risks and environmental impact of DU weapons and calling for a cautionary approach to their use. The resolution was approved by 147 nations. The US, UK, France, and the Zionist regime voted against the proposal. Ukraine will soon receive American uranium munitions capable of destroying heavy Russian tanks, according to media reports. According to Sputnik, the controversial depleted uranium shells, whose toxicity and detrimental effect on the environment have been a cause of concern since NATO and the U.S. used them in Kosovo and Iraq, respectively, have once again been thrust into the limelight. This time over news about the potential supply of depleted uranium shells to Ukraine. Depleted uranium is a dense metal that possesses exceptional properties for military applications. Its high density makes it ideal for armor-piercing projectiles, as it can easily penetrate thick armor. Additionally, depleted uranium is self-sharpening, which means it maintains its shape and penetrative capabilities upon impact, making it highly effective against armor targets. Depleted uranium has been extensively used in military conflicts since the 1990s. It has found its place in various ammunition types, including rounds, shells, bullets, and armor. Its effectiveness in penetrating armored vehicles and fortifications has made it a preferred choice for anti-tank weaponry. Sputnik added, one of the primary concerns is its potential health and environmental impacts. When depleted uranium projectiles strike their targets, they release fine particles of uranium dust, which can be inhaled or contaminate the soil and water. This raises concerns about the long-term effects on both human health and the environment. One of the most debated questions is whether depleted uranium is radioactive. While depleted uranium is less radioactive than natural uranium, it still emits low levels of radiation. However, the main health risk associated with depleted uranium is not its radioactivity, but rather its chemical toxicity. Studies have shown correlations between exposure to depleted uranium and various health problems such as cancer, birth defects, and kidney damage. NATO forces used depleted uranium ammo in Yugoslavia and Iraq, where now surging rates of cancer, including cancer among children, have been recorded. NATO troops are also suffering the effects of these ammo, since their commanders failed to inform them about the potential health risks.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, let there be light. And there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Mohammed Jawad, the host in this program, and my guest speakers, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser. Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And Brother Yasser, how are you? And assalamu alaikum to you too.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Again, thanks for having me, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
You're welcome. Well, one of the movies actually with religious themes is Joseph. I know this is a kind of old movie produced in 1995, directed by Roger Young, but I found it very much amusing. In fact, it talks about a very, very interesting story, you know. Starring Ben Kingsley, Monica Bellucci, Paul Mercury, you know, and the like, and so on and so forth. But the thing is, let's take a short break by listening to a short part of this movie, or a trailer of Joseph, directed by Roger Young, and then we'll be back with a question which is relevant, especially to that part. Thank you very much. Stay with us.
Thank God, Willard. And then you will take me back to Canaan, the land God promised Abraham. And it will be as the Lord promised. Our descendants shall be known as Israel, and will be a multitude of nations, each brother unto himself, a tribe of Israel.
back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. We are going to criticize the movie Joseph, produced in 1995, directed by Roger Young, while featuring stars such as Ben Kingsley, Monica Bellucci, Paul Mercury, to just name a few. Well, Syed Abdullah, let me start with you. IMDb actually gives it 7.6 out of 10, which is somehow a satisfactory approval rate, right? And DVD Netflix gives it 3.9 out of 5, and Letterboxd 3.4 out of 5 again. You know, the whole story revolves around Prophet Joseph. Of course, they don't consider him as that kind of, you know, divinely attributed prophet, as we Muslims do, you know. So it revolves around Joseph, who was betrayed and sold to slavery by his jealous brothers for being their father's son, or apple of the eye. He rose from the chains of slavery to the height of power. Let me ask you, how do you like this movie?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The movie, I mean, it's a mini series and put in one movie.
Right.
It's okay.
Right.
It wasn't that bad, to be quite honest. I mean, you're looking, watching it because of the low budget that it had.
Mm-hmm.
It actually gave it more of a natural look. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, and the fact that it is very close to the story of the Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam in the Quran, so it was very close. So it was also kind of interesting seeing how they depicted the events themselves. So it was good. I particularly liked the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the landscape was really nice. The rivers and the you know, tents and stuff like that. Was like, it had, like I said, it had a very natural look to it, rather than just like one of these crazy movies with a lot of effects. So yeah, it was natural, was watchable. It's
usually they're shooting these movies which belong to the Middle East, the Middle East.
Exactly. Basically. So I'm looking at the landscape. I would say definitely it is one of the Middle East countries.
Yeah.
Because the
normally they do, yeah.
Yeah, because I don't know if this is me, but even the color of the sand is different in the Middle East than in the West.
Yeah, it's really
so nice. Yeah, so the landscape was really nice. The costume design was good. The, like I said, it was very simplistic in its nature. So it was watchable.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that explains why it had such good reviews itself. Like, you know, whether Rotten Tomatoes or the other ones, they kind of gave it good reviews, because it has that natural look to it. Now, as far as the story goes itself, obviously we have some differences when it comes to the Bible and the Quran. But, I mean, they were working with whatever they had, I guess.
Thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Joseph, produced in 1995, directed by Roger Young, and then we'll be back with his question. Don't go away.
He's the best, sir. He's a fine slave, sir. Look at that fine head. Look at those shoulders. Look at that back. Those arms. He is perfect. Teeth. Young.
He's healthy enough, but probably never done a hard day's labor in his life.
Ah, but he can be trained, master. He's submissive. He's obedient. You'd do anything without a whimper. And he knows his place. Never opens his mouth except to pray.
Is that true, boy?
Answer the master.
And to whom are these prayers addressed? Which gods?
Only one, my lord.
Only one god.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Mahajal, hosting this program, and Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser helping me criticize the movie as my guest speakers here in the studio. Brother Yasser, you know, having seen the movie, you know, the first encounter at the beginning of the movie, well, almost, the first encounter of Potiphar with Joseph, we all know who Potiphar is, you know. It's the first Joseph's master when he was sold in this, you know, on the market to Potiphar and his wife, of course, in the slaves market. You know, there is a debate between the two, I mean, Potiphar and Joseph. at the beginning of this movie that somehow braces everyone, the audience, into thinking this is a religious movie, you know? Because they're talking about their belief in one God and how is it different from polytheism, basically. Is that true, really? I mean, like, do we have the same kind of evidence like in the other holy scriptures rather than the Bible?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. With regards to the stories of the Anbiya, the Quran is very brief, very vague at times, ambiguous. And what is fascinating is that the story of Yusuf alayhi salam is the only story that comes in one chapter of the Noble Quran. The other stories of the other Anbiya are scattered throughout the various chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the story of Yusuf alayhi salam is in one chapter, and the chapter is called Yusuf. So there's a lot of things that are missing. Even then we refer to the ahadith of the A'imma alayhim as-salam, more so in the secondary books of hadith that we have, not the primary books, in the secondary books. And one of the things also that is very dangerous in this thing is what we know as is Israiliyat, which is a study in itself of tradition that were entered into the Islamic corpus of traditions.
The fake hadith,
or the other reasons why they were added as well. One of the reasons why that certain things were added to stories regarding the prophets is because there were many gaps. And because people who were maybe once upon a time Christian or Jewish, who became Muslim, or those Christians that were had nefarious intentions with regards to Islam. Mm. So on both sides of the coin, you can look at it.
Yes.
They say, okay, there's a gap here, but the Bible says this. So they would fill the gap with what the Bible would say, or they would fill the gap with what the Old Testament or the New Testament would say.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they would create the continuous story. However, in the sense, it's better to say it's not written, we don't know, because it's not clear.
Right.
But obviously, as a movie, it has to play with imagination, right? You have to come to imagination. You have this kind of innovation that you're allowed to bring about in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, it is not far-fetched that such debates may have happened at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the person is going to ask you, where have you come from? Why do you have this belief? And so on and so forth.
Because it's very much detailed.
Yeah, yeah. It's very, the movie itself looks at certain
unless
things.
We have like very well-documented, for example, what do you call it, historical evidence.
Evidence which we don't.
Yeah.
Like, I'll give an example. We might ask you later. Like, for example, for 14 years, Yusuf al-Islam was in Egypt. 14 years. What happened in those 14 years? Was he just someone selling grain and consuming grain? No. Mm-hmm. There were other things that happened.
Yeah.
But all we know is this, for definite, this is what he did. Mm-hmm. And what else did he do?
Thank you very much, Brother Yasser. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Joseph, produced in 1995, directed by Roger Young, and then we'll be back and criticize it. Don't go away.
Go, leave me with the slave. Come. I thought I could trust you.
But you can, Master.
If anyone approaches, keep your hands behind you.
Thank you, Master.
Now explain yourself.
How, Master?
She accuses you of the vilest crime, Joseph, and demands the full measure of the law in vengeance, which means your head.
And a man guilty of that crime would deserve nothing less.
So you deny it?
Yes, of course. But who would believe a slave pleading for his life?
I deserve better than that from you. I've treated you more like a son than a slave. Trusted my entire estate to you. Made you the law of my house in my absence. You a slave!
But your lands prospered under my hand.
Which is why I'd rather not see you dead. Take me years to find another like you. Is there nothing you can say in your defense?
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Mahajad, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Joseph, produced in 1995, directed by Roger Young, a part of which that you just listened to. Well, Sayyid Abdullah, Potiphar's wife accused Joseph of rape, which he rejects or rejected categorically. Of course, all of us, we know the reality. And this movie portrays Potiphar, Joseph's master, as a rational master, very rational, sensible, who understands what's going on around him, you know, who knows his wife lying. You know, is that true? I mean, is that reading or is that narration of the Bible similar to the Quran, or do we have any discrepancies here?
The Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is, interestingly, when he talks about the story of Yusuf, the Quran begins, إِنَّا نَحْنَ نَقُصُّ عَلَيْكَ أَحْسَنُ الْقَصَصِ. Allah said the best of stories is the story of Yusuf, compared to all the prophets. Yes. Obviously, because it's got so much lessons in every parts and aspect of life, you can derive lessons from it. When it came to the attack of Zulaykha on Yusuf, interestingly, like in the movie itself, Joseph, the Bible version, they obviously made the contact happen between them, like even prior, that's like there's a scene with the pool, she was touching Yusuf and stuff like that, and she was threatening him and he just went with it. And then when it came to the, you know, to the part where she was asking him to be intimate with her, that's when he rejected and, you know, he ran away. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, that scene itself from the Quran is also, we have a bit of differences, but the event happened. Mm-hmm. When it came to the Lord himself, to Pharaoh himself, Pharaoh, according to the Quran projects it as also sounds reasonable. Because he didn't make a haste decision and say, okay, let's kill Yusuf. He said, okay, let me hear your story. Yusuf said to him, and he said, okay, what's your evidence? He said, you know, the Quran says, if his shirt was ripped from the front, then he's, you know, he's lying and she's lying and this and that. He was taking all that into consideration and talking. So obviously, but then, you know, he didn't want to put his wife down. So he said, okay, we'll send him to prison. So he was kind of logical about it. And even when he invited Yusuf later on, when he had the dream, Yusuf said to him, no, I would not do anything with you unless we clarify the cases of the woman, because I need to clear my reputation. And he brought all the women, and then he himself admitted the king. He said, "In hada min kaydikun," this is all from your deception and you're deceiving. So he was a bit logical, even from the Quranic perspective. He had a bit of logic. And you can see that his logic even continued when he decided to even hire Yusuf to be the prince of Egypt.
Well, who was Joseph's master? Because according to the Bible, it was Potiphar, right? As portrayed in this movie clearly. But the thing is, the Quran doesn't mention the name of the Pharaoh, right?
Fir'aun. The Quran says Fir'aun. Yes. Fir'aun,
Aziz.
Aziz
is not the Pharaoh.
Egypt, yeah.
Aziz was the governor, was the person just under the Pharaoh. He was like his right-hand man. It was not the Pharaoh himself.
So yeah, that could be it. So
it was the Aziz of Misr.
Yeah, right. So Aziz of Misr. It is in reference to the someone lower, higher than Fir'aun or Fir'aun himself. Then at the end of the day, he was a very logical person. Mm-hmm. And he made him in charge of the treasury of Misr, of Egypt. So,
okay.
So it was logical to a certain extent, yeah.
Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah, and thank you very much, Brother Yasser, for your nice contribution to the program, Viewpoint, this movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Joseph, produced in 1995, directed by Roger Young, featuring stars such as Ben Kingsley, Monica Bellucci, Paul Marchiori, to just name a few. Inshallah, we'll continue the criticism of this movie in the upcoming episode. Thank you very much. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Mistress, please, you should not be here.
I want his...
I have heard the reports. The slave is guilty.
My God! Why have you forsaken me? We'll be right back.
follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
The Limelight. The credit rating agency Fitch has downgraded the U.S. government's top credit rating on Tuesday, 1st of August, a move that drew an angry response from the White House. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered the story and tells us more. Fitch Ratings has downgraded U.S. credit from the highest rating, citing the nation's growing debt and its eroding political stability. In Fitch's view, there has been a steady deterioration in standards of governance over the last 20 years, including on fiscal and debt matters, the ratings agency said on Tuesday, 1st of August. The repeated debt limit political standoffs and last-minute resolutions have eroded confidence in fiscal management in the United States. The rating agency also cited the U.S.'s complex budgeting process and its lack of a medium-term financial planning relative to its peers in explaining the downgrade to AA+ from the U.S.'s previous AAA level. These factors, combined with the fiscal shocks from the pandemic, new spending and tax cuts, have brought the debt to 113% of the national economic output, well above pre-pandemic levels. The Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen described the new credit rating, calling it arbitrary and baseless on outdated data. Fitch's decision does not change what Americans, investors and people all around the world already know, that Treasury's securities remain the world's preeminent safe and liquid asset, and that the American economy is fundamentally strong, Janet Yellen said in a statement that touted the U.S.'s economic recovery from the coronavirus recession and the administration's plans to reduce the budget deficit. Reduced credit ratings could lead the U.S. to pay higher interest rates on Treasury notes, on bills and bonds, according to the Associated Press. We strongly disagree with this decision, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said in a statement. The ratings model used by Fitch declined under President Trump and then improved under President Biden, and it defies reality to downgrade the United States at a moment when President Biden has delivered the strongest recovery of any major economy in the world. The United States last faced a downgrade in 2011 when Standard & Poor's cut the nation's credit rating one notch after prolonged wrangling in Congress brought the U.S. close to a debt default.
Thank you.
The website npr.org, National Public Radio, has also covered the same story. Fitch Ratings cut the United States' credit rating by one notch from the top-rated AAA to AA+, saying rising deficits and political brinkmanship are imperiling the U.S. government's ability to pay its debts. The downgrade comes just 2 months after the Biden administration and House Republicans agreed to suspend the government's debt ceiling in a last-minute deal, narrowly avoiding a potentially disastrous federal default. It marks another rebuke for the United States, which lost its AAA rating from Standard & Poor's back in 2011, in the midst of another debt ceiling standoff. Today, only one of the three major credit rating agencies, Moody's Investors Service, gives the United States a top-notch AAA rating. Fitch acknowledged the strength of the U.S. economy and the advantages convened by the dollar's role as the world's most important currency. But the credit rating agency warned of mounting red ink and an unwillingness in both political parties to grapple with long-term fiscal challenges, while expressing little confidence in the U.S. government's ability to manage the country's finances. In Fitch's view, there has been a steady deterioration in standards of governance in the United States over the last 20 years, including on fiscal and debt matters, the credit rating agency said in announcing the downgrade. The repeated debt limit, political standoffs, and last-minute resolutions have eroded confidence in fiscal management in the United States. The move drew swift pushback from the Biden administration. The U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen called it arbitrary and based on outdated information. Fitch's decision does not change what Americans, investors, and people all around the world already know, Janet Yellen said in a statement. Treasury securities remain the world's preeminent safe and liquid asset, and the American economy is fundamentally strong. Fitch notes that spending limits adopted as part of the debt deal, clinched in June, cover only a small fraction of the overall budget and don't address long-term challenges in financing Social Security and Medicare for an aging population. Tax cuts and government spending have led to widening government deficits in recent years, and with rising interest rates, the cost of bridging that gap has increased. Government interest payments in the first 9 months of the fiscal year totaled $652 billion, a 25% increase from the same period a year earlier. Today's downgrade should be a wake-up call, said Maya McGuinness, president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Maya McGuinness added, "We are clearly on an unsustainable fiscal path, and we need to do better." The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. Rating agency Fitch downgraded the US government's top credit rating on Tuesday, 1st of August, a move that drew an angry response from the Biden White House and surprised investors. Fitch downgraded the United States to AA+ from its AAA rating, citing fiscal deterioration over the next 3 years and repeated down-the-wire debt ceiling negotiations that threaten the U.S. government's ability to pay its bills. It is the second major rating agency after Standard & Poor's to strip the United States of its AAA rating. Fitch had first flagged the possibility of a downgrade back in May amid the U.S. debt ceiling negotiations, then maintained that position in June after the crisis was resolved, saying it intended to resolve the review in the third quarter of this year. After the announcement, the U.S. dollar fell across a range of currencies, stock futures ticked down and Treasury futures rose. But several investors and analysts said they expected the impact of the downgrade to be limited. The move came despite the resolution of the U.S. debt ceiling crisis 2 months ago. Joe Biden and the Republican-controlled House of Representatives reached a debt ceiling agreement in May, following months of political brinkmanship and wrangling. The deal lifted the government's $31.4 trillion borrowing limit. In Fitch's view, there has been a steady deterioration in standards of governance in the United States over the last 20 years, including on fiscal and debt matters, notwithstanding the June bipartisan agreement to suspend the debt limit until January of 2025. The rating agency said in a statement, "The repeated debt limit political standoffs and last-minute resolutions have eroded confidence in fiscal management by the U.S. government," it said. Janet Yellen, the U.S. Treasury Secretary, said she disagreed with Fitch's downgrade in a statement that calls it arbitrary and based on outdated data. The Biden White House had a similar view, saying it strongly disagrees with this decision. "It defies reality to downgrade the United States at the moment when President Biden has delivered the strongest recovery of any major economy in the world," said Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House's press secretary. Investors use credit ratings to assess the risk profile of companies and governments when they raise financing in the debt capital market. Generally, the lower a borrower's credit rating, the higher its financing costs.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Your headlines for this hour: Iran's foreign ministry spokesman lashes out at Israeli intelligence ministers' meeting with anti-Iran elements fomenting riots in the country. Israeli troops attack anti-settlement protesters in the occupied West Bank, leaving dozens of Palestinians injured. And G20 leaders arrive in India for a weekend summit amid divisions over key issues on their agenda.